Thank you for joining us here in the second hour, folks. Welcome back. Glad to have you along. We are talking with Zen Gardner from zengardner.com about our times, the spirit of the warrior, and basically everything else, an assessment a little bit of the current situation, what we find ourselves in, and of course, what to do next, really. What is the point from here? What do we need to do to engage in the world and start moving and shaking things in the direction where we want to see them? I mean, I want to see control of culture, Zen. This is something I've been talking about recently here, but I mean, Hollywood, we have a media now to a certain extent where we watch and we observe that, as you said before, the mainstream media is really kind of crumbling really before our eyes, and its credibility is going down day by day by day. But Hollywood has done a tremendous amount of damage. And my questions have been for a long time, you know, the culture is what really shapes it. This is what the cultural Marxists knew, of course. That's why they got in there and did it in that way. But taking back that control, controlling the dialogue and the stories of our lives. And I mean, I'm amazed we haven't seen more, for example, you know, movies on our ancient mythologies and ancestors and everything else, even from a, you know, European perspective or other people for that matter. But I think it's important to kind of head in a direction with when it comes to culture, Zen, and beginning to push in a new direction in terms of this, and a culture that actually can influence people later on, and which consequently affects everything else from you know, politics and everything else. What do you think can be done there? I've asked other people this too. I mean, is it just a matter of, do you think getting a couple of good you know, people that actually have a lot of money and investors that are interested in starting something new when it comes to, you know, media and entertainment, but having a conscious awareness of it in mind? Or is there something else that's needed here, do you think?
Wow. Yeah, the media barrage is the onslaught, as you said, is it's outright disgusting. I don't know. What comes to me is building it from the family unit and starting there to encourage family and people taking a direct interest, or an aware interest in their family. And like you said, if somebody wants to keep the culture alive, it's going to be within the family unit first and foremost, like, you know, like the atom, and then it goes to a molecule, or at least a parallel influence. But if people can be activated to invest in meaningful, you know, cultural rebuilding, once they understand the seriousness of what's going on and the importance of culture, what it really means, not the pseudo-scientific, social-scientific meaning they've given it today, to find the right people who are interested, that's a brilliant idea, who would bankroll something like that, at least, you know, get it into the alternative film world, or even something more mainstream eventually, but building an interest in that subject. Is that what's happening now? Are you experiencing that in Europe? Are people talking about the return to their original culture, mm-hmm. or are you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I say so. It's not that, you know, reached that critical mass point, of course, at this stage, but I'm definitely sensing that. I'm feeling it. Even the shows we've done on it and the reception of that, and just the way that people are engaged, and they're looking for something which means mm-hmm. fulfillment, something which is mm-hmm. theirs, you know, something which is true and part of them and everything else. I mean, this is so incredibly important. I think we've, you know, kind of, well, one thing I've seen in the alternative, not to go on a rant here or anything, but one thing I've seen in the alternative is kind of a, which is good. It's kind of a self-loathing. It's a self-resentment of everything you are, the culture you come from, your nation, the everything that has, you know, kind of been part of you during the time when you weren't awake. And that's kind of an understandable position. You mm-hmm. get to a point where you realize it's a facsimile. It's kind of like a straw man, really. We've heard what culture is, or what it has done, or you hear something about your history, and we realize when we look at it now with hindsight, you know, that we can see, all right, we've actually been lied to about pretty much everything we can think of and look back on. But this has caused a kind of a self hatred, I feel, which is understandable, as I said. It's been kind of a almost like a military strategy, how you break someone down to build them up again. And I feel a little bit we're at that stage now where we need to learn to love ourselves again, love where we come from and who we are, and building up a stronger human being now after that we've smashed and destroyed the strawman, the facsimile, that version that they told us that we were. And that's an essential point. And I feel, in a way, that the original, you know, traditions of our cultures, wherever we come from in the world, is a tremendous important part. And again, it doesn't mean that we should go back and, you know, plow the fields with an ox and worship Odin, you know, in my regard. But it speaks to a veneration of what you are, that everything that has led up to who you are, and even the fact that you're alive today, has to do with ancestry and them being there and surviving for your sake, you know?
Right, right. Well, you can sure relate to the indigenous populations of the world that have been decimated. This has been their heart cry for generations, you know, the Native Americans, North Canada and U.S., the repressed peoples everywhere. And they've been so small and seemingly insignificant, nobody's listened. Maybe this will be a chance for this issue to really be broadcast by very influential and powerful people. I think the first thing people need to know that it's okay to rebuild. It's okay to have cultural identity. It's okay to stand up for it. Because right now they're being painted as fascist, anti-Zionist, anti-Jewish, you know, right-wing extremists.
Well, and that, it feels... Sorry to interrupt again, but it feels to me, Zen, that we've had basically at this stage, we've come to a point where there is a veneration of every conceivable indigenous culture, and they have protective councils and the UN and all kinds of stuff. But as soon as you talk about European culture and heritage.
No, you're right. It's like the antithesis of the, you can't talk about Zionism.
Yeah.
You
know,
exactly. It's blacked out of people's minds because this is not an option, which I understood when you and John were talking about this issue about, you know, the white race. You're not allowed to be pro-white, but you can be pro anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all the guilt baggage and all that kind of stuff. People have been, you know, shamed into a lack of response. It's going to be, I guess, the sensitivity for any kind of a racial issue or exacerbating racial tension. That's what people are going to, you know, be decrying, especially the Zionists who are trying to make everything an amorphous mush
Of
society, which is, you know, without identity. And like you're saying, I mean, it's something very serious, and it's something, with or without this onslaught on society, people have lost track of. They've lost track of their ancestry, their roots. And that's, I mean, the more I learn, the more I learn how essential it is. And it's, I mean, I can sense it. I've even through dreams, I'm getting in touch with relatives, but.
Me too. That's interesting. You mentioned that.
I think
there's a lot of kind of stuff flying around in the kind of the new age alternative a while back in terms of, like, you know, DNA activation and all that kind of stuff. Right. And people can, you know, think what they want about that. That's all good. But what I've come to realize that what it means, you know, again, for me anyway, then, is that it actually has to do with a recognition of ancestral history within your genetics. Kind of as I said before, that you actually have a preservation, you know, a desire and a will and intention and even information, if one wants to believe that. And I certainly believe that there's evidence enough that there are, you know, genetic memory and everything else, that is you. It's part of you. It's who you are. It's literally, and if this is something that can be recognized, and if you could get in touch with that and to a certain extent then activate that within you, that's a tremendous force and something which gives you a dedication and an energy which is unprecedented in terms of anything else that you can put on yourself or adopt in terms of ideology or faith or anything like that, because it's literally weaved into your biology, tremendously strong, you know, and important.
Well, think about it, how it parallels spiritual connectivity. We don't know because of scientists, but even quantum mechanics, quantum physics has learned everything's interconnected. At this fundamental level, we're each interconnected via consciousness, via this, our marvelous universe. Everything's interconnected. So why wouldn't it stand to reason, even reason, that our physical manifestation, our electronic vibrational programming is reflective of interdimensional, intertime lineage? Why wouldn't that be? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It's like, it's crazy. It's like a branch on a tree saying, I have nothing to do with the trunk.
Exactly.
Or, you know, yeah. Look at those weird roots down there. They got nothing to do with me. You know, it's as crazy as that. For sure. I mean, the whole idea of DNA and these things, it's just fascinating because, you know, as they say that perhaps when our race was tampered with, it was clipped and we're being inhibited from having our full potential. Well, you know what? It's like, you know, it can grow back, you know, as long as we're part of living conscious, you know, creation, anything is possible. Anything. Everything is possible. So
yeah.
When it comes to these kinds of fields, I look for the parallel and to me it all makes sense for sure. It's and getting back in touch with our ancestral heritage. I mean, when my son in the Pacific Northwest, he's very much into the connecting with the indigenous people there as well as he did in Hawaii. And he's learned so much about their love and respect for their ancestors and what it means to them, it's, you know, spiritually in a very deep way. And it's been very interesting to learn with him about that. So it's definitely a part. And I think it has to do with our sense of the family being broken down too, because we're losing our immediate families. And, you know, old people are being put into homes, treated like crap, and then euthanized. It's, you know, obviously the world here is not family friendly.
No,
no, no, no. But it should be a big sign on Earth, warning: not family friendly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Jeez. But you know, archons at work.
But it's
yeah.
Yeah, it's really important, you know, and also this idea that we've become these very very lost, you know, rootless, atomized small pockets within just an empty, really corporatized, unspiritual, you know, world, which is very much to the detriment, I feel, of everything. And I think it has to do with more aspects as well. It's about shutting down, you know, creativity. It's about shutting down even industriousness and things that have been, you know, part of who we are and everything else. That the control grid that's being built around us doesn't need these kinds of human beings that are connected, who are, you know, complete, who are whole, who have a big sense of, you know, identity and everything else. They just need these very grunt, you know, kind of worker types or whatever that are not thinking much about anything. And that's really their goal. See, that's really their goal at the end of it, to create this, the whole monoglob that they're creating right now. Mm-hmm. That's the epitome of it. Just basically steeped in corporate culture and nothing else beyond that, nothing deeper, you know, very, very, oh, it's awful, you know.
Yeah, you see this when a country gets socialized. Let's say it was before that, I mean, call it capitalism. I don't believe in that, but it's where you're driven for your own profit. There's a motivation, even if it's selfish, that there's something driving people. When a new government comes in and it socializes it and it's all government owned, government run, people don't give a crap. They have no enthusiasm. They get the same old paycheck and they go home to their little cement block, and that's going to be the world of the future with people in their minds loving their servitude.
Yeah.
So they think, but that's very much the case, and that's what's clamping down. And you're right, people are losing their oomph. They figure, what for? And I'll just sit in front of the TV and get somatized. And the onslaught of horrific incidences and overload of information, and, you know, plus the threatenings of the militarized police and everything else, the wars, a home and abroad, they're just getting herded into their homes, and then they scurry off to work, and they're losing their initiative, losing their fight. And you're right, that's the world they're trying to bring on. Homogenized sleep.
Yeah. And again, it's a comfort zone thing, right? We've mm-hmm. complacency. We've just kind of lost that you know, edge overall, and God knows it's, or the gods knows it's done from all these different angles, and you know, foods and chemicals and materials and media, propaganda, movies, you know, everything. It's a complete onslaught. But there has to be a, within that, there has to be that kind of awakening and recognition of of who we are, and touching, you know, with something which is real and authentic. Otherwise, we're lost, and it's almost to a point of, well, and even so, if so, then, you know, if we don't, what's worth preserving about that? It's all, again, as I said before, it's a facsimile. It's just a, it's a fake version of what it used to be a human being. And today it's not that, you know?
I think personally, we're heading for a epidemic of suicides. I think they're driving people to despair. And also, look, I'm a useless eater. Look at the horrors that I brought on the world by all this pollution. Look at the global warming. Look what a horrible person I am. And then the economic conditions clamp down further, we're going to see a lot of people taking their own lives just out of complete desperation and depression. I mean, they can retreat into their little cement block of a house or their little flat, and for only so long. But after a period of time, especially the older people, they're just not going to want to be here. It's a very tragic time. But I was reminded of even in Newtonian physics, even though that, you know, he's kind of a flatlander, when it comes to the really cool stuff, but you know, action reaction. For every force, there's an equal and opposite reaction. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. What you're describing, this clampdown on humanity and the driving into their little boxed lives, there's a reaction, and it may not be manifesting right now in a political, you know, in the streets, or you know, such a pushback that just goes and wipes out the government. But it's happening. Maybe we're at the time, like when in the chamber of an engine, when the piston goes down, and then the spray of the petrol goes into the chamber, makes a mist, and then when the spark hits that mist, bam! That's when the traction starts, and it does that, you know, as it picks up speed. That's happening many times per I don't know if it's per second. I guess so. But I think we're right there at that point where this thing is about to ignite, and it's going to start to turn over an engine that we've never seen before, at least that never seen manifested like that.
Yeah.
I think we're at a very, very, at the apex of something.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, and just briefly speaking to something you said before, we just published an article a couple of days ago here about Swedish, actually, suicide statistics. They were always high in the 60s and 70s and part in the 80s, I believe, and a lot of that was during when the Social Democratic Party had ruled the country with a velvet gloved iron fist for many yeah. years, you know, and now they've actually gone back up again. They're actually at an all-time 25-year high right now. It's not been so high since 1989, so that's kind of returning. I thought it was interesting you brought that up, but nonetheless, you know, I think we're going to see some pretty interesting, weird things happening in the next, you know, 10, 20 years out of that left wheel, completely unexpected people who have a tremendous amount of, you know, creativity to kind of upset the direction of where we're in, upset the programming that people are under and everything else to really awaken people and to get some stuff kind of moving and shaking a little bit. I'm kind of excited where it's heading. It's a dark passage. But it's part of that concept called the dark enlightenment. You know, it's like we have to move through that, and we have to have these challenges to be able to rediscover ourselves, reignite, and head in a new direction. It's almost like nature comes in with something like this when we are complacent. We've lost our way. That's when we need to be challenged to head in a new direction, right?
Yeah. It's I sort of picture an hourglass, but the sand is going up. You know, with the awakening, people are moving against gravity.
Yeah.
Forming this a much better non-gravitational sort of environment. But it's going to be very strange, and we're already seeing it just by the behavior of people. I mean, this thing in Palestine is as off the charts as it gets. I mean, that there isn't more outrage is mind-boggling. But I think people are going to, as I said before, there's going to be spiritual manifestations that are going to freak some people out if they're not on their toes. Very strange behaviors of people who pick up these sort of, you know, Ghostbuster type of things. There's nothing to fear, but people should be aware of it. And especially if people who have not woken up, they're going to be actually very dangerous people to be around. You're not going to know exactly what they're going to do next. So that's why they're playing this meme of the zombie apocalypse. They're trying to condition people to realize when everything goes berserk in the street, you know, this is why we're going to have to just shoot them because they're not even human. There's, you know, all this stuff is, you know, predictive programming, as you know. But
yeah,
it's going to be too true to life. And they know it. They know something's coming. That's why they're militarizing everything to their teeth, because they know people are eventually going to hit a point. I think it's Max Kaiser said, he said, when people's income, when 40% of their income has to go for food, that's when they take to the street.
Right. Yeah.
And that's just going to be messy. At that point, the rules don't apply. I mean, you might have a nice neighbor 1 minute and the same guy busting into your root cellar, taking all your food. You don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be very, very chaotic. But people who are tuning in, waking up, and they go with the signals, and they're taking the initiative. They're taking advantage of openings. They're not hesitating anymore, at least to the best of their ability. They're going to be ready. Things are going to work in their favor. It's learning to align to these spiritual principles, I think, is the most important preparation people can make. Learning to listen to your heart, because when the internet gets shut down and electronics go wonky, we're going to have to just know by knowing. And even with people we're very close to, we may be able to communicate. I think that it's not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, you already sense it. It's happened all the time. You call somebody and say, I was just thinking of you. Or you write somebody and say, I was thinking about you with this. I bet. And then, you know, I'll step out there and I'll say, you know, I bet you're this. And the person goes, yes, how did you know? And I say, well, you know how it works. but we have to learn to trust that and develop that. It's because it's atrophied right now. It's just a limp little, weapon that should be really strong. So I think we need to find ways to activate those spiritual muscles as best we can by trusting them now, taking that step that we were hesitant to take. Said, well, there's no reason for that. Well, if you got it under the conditions that you know these things come in, why don't you give it a shot? And learning to do that and walk that new life, that's the practice, and everything else is going to come with it.
Yeah, it's exactly so you can be in the right place at the right time. I mean, gut instinct. I mean, I think that is based on, of course, your own innate, you know, instinctual intelligence, really. But also, who knows? Maybe it's also part of that DNA memory and everything else that there are experiences there that is worth, you know, kind of gleaning off of, you know, and using that as a value source. And again, I think that's why they've also been trying to kind of shut down those processes in human beings, that we're constantly being told kind of not to respond to our innate, you know, human awareness. They put it in the politically correct kind of terminology so that you feel that it's something that it's bad, for example. But I brought this up in another show, but I think it's worth mentioning it again. For example, something like prejudice, they've managed to turn that into something really, really negative when it actually is about making pre-judgmental decisions that are, they claiming that it's based on irrationality, but an instinctual, assessment of is this a threat or not is actually a very positive, you know, human response to actually that is spawned out of survival mechanisms over, you know, millions and millions of years. But so all these little, you know, basic drives that we have within us, everything of human nature is something that they started a war on, and basically saying, you know, become this perfectly controlled, this new world order little puppet, which is don't work off of any instinct. You don't have any, you know, opinions or judgments of your own. It's all just complete mayhem, you know, and it's very important to realize why they're doing this and what kind of language they're using against us, you know.
The Matrix is a very fine mesh. They don't leave a lot of gaps. These guys, they start early and they cover it. This illusion is a very thorough one. And either just cut through it and get the hell out of it and rip it away and distance yourself and then learn as fast as you can how to identify it before it tries to envelop you again, or you're going to be stuck in it. I mean, look at the insanity. Look how early they start. I wrote an article, what it's called, something and other programmed idiocies. I was talking about nursery rhymes and sayings that, like, look at the expression, curiosity killed the cat. Do they have that in Swedish?
No, I don't recognize that one, actually, no.
No? In English, it's curiosity killed the cat. And that's a scold you give children for doing something that you don't think they should have done.
Right.
Like, don't look in that daddy's closet, or don't go reading that book. That's for adults. Or don't ask questions about, or like, don't talk religion and politics. All these, I know. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
And there's a nursery rhyme. Another one in the States. Now I lay me down to sleep. Have you ever heard this?
Yeah.
I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul will take. Isn't that the most? Or rockabye baby in the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. When the bough breaks, the cradle will fall. Down goes baby, cradle and all. That's a lullaby.
Right, right. Great.
So put your kid to bed with fear. Make him insecure. If you're teaching him about God, make sure he's insecure about God and his relationship with God, because maybe the Lord will take my soul tonight. I'm not sure, but I'll pray every night. You know, I'll just keep praying because I'm just a helpless little person. Now, I mean, there's expression after expression, but it's, the programming is very deep and it's not innocent in the least. But people start waking up to the programming.
Oh, boy.
It's a shocker. A shocker. All of a sudden you find expressions that you say and words that you use are so self-debilitating. You know, like, I believe so-and-so. What do you mean you believe? Either you think it and you're not sure about it, or you know it.
Know it, yeah.
But okay. What is believe? Or, boy, I sure hope that'll happen. What does that mean? Hope is so freaking misused and debilitating. Believe is another word like that. These things are, they're mushy. You know, linguistics is so important. People get a handle on it because words are so important. They're either empowering or they're disempowering. They're blocking information or they're channeling information. And how they play with language and little expressions is very important for people to get aware of, because it's ingrained, and we repeat them like parrots because we were born with it. don't realize what we're saying.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's a good point. Just this whole idea of endless uncertainty or even relativism. No, we don't know anything. We can never know anything. This is kind of what they teach now in, most sciences, really, from physics to psychology, of moral relativism. It's a whole lot of nothing. I mean, even in religion, there's none so clueless, unfortunately, as some of the, at least in Sweden, those interviews I've seen with some of the Christian pastors and everything else. It's a country, obviously, that's moving more and more and more towards atheism, which I see, although I enjoy seeing the disconnection from Christianity. But with that, I hope we see a reconnection with our religion that was pushed out and violently pushed out many thousands of years ago, or actually about 1,000 years, 1,200 years ago
and learned about and pursued and get the underlying spirituality, what it was reflecting.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And these pastors are like completely clueless. It's almost like they're more atheists than the atheists these days.
It's
like nothing there at all. You know, it's like, whoa, what is God? You know, it's like, it's nothing there. You know?
So, it's the Christian paradigm. I think the religious paradigms are the toughest to break out of, because it pretends to answer all questions and gives you a fail-safe place to go. You know, it's God's will, or it's in the Word of God. Everything's got there's carpets all over to sweep stuff under, and it's so self-contained. That's why Zionism can tool it so easily, because you can reinforce it. Oh, it's the Word of God. These are Abraham's people. and it was promised to them. And the Bible says when they return to their land, it is, you know, this is going to happen, and then the end of the world will come, and which they might be right about. But these contained systems are so self-reinforcing, and then they get around other people who are getting all whipped up in it. and they're so hierarchical on top of it. You got to go to your pastor, and your pastor goes here. And you got to go through Jesus to get to God. You know, blah, 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 blah. It's, they're tough. They're tough ones to break out of.
Yeah.
You've probably seen it in the remarks on the internet. The Christians always come back with not always. There's some wonderful Christians who really get it.
Exactly. I was just going to say, you know, to be fair, I mean, to be honest, I have a lot of the Christians that I talk with and encounter, I want people to understand that I don't have a problem with Christians. I question how Christianity was imposed upon my people, and I question what kind of force in the world it represents today. But most Christians I've met and talked with they're wonderful people, and they have actually, a lot of them also serve as a force that has exhibited some kind of actually sanity, and they put the brakes on society at a time when we have this like insane suicidal progressivism that's going on, you know? So I like that part of it, you know?
Well, there's an element of mystic Christianity, which I think is what these ones who are the awakened Christians who really get the essence, because the spirit of the Christ of which, you know, people talk about the avatars, Buddha, and different characters who appeared. I don't, you know, the mysticism underlying it, and this acknowledging of a spiritual force. What religion has done is hijacked spirituality. They have said, yes, because everybody senses it. Everybody knows that there's this amazing universe. Call it God, call it whatever. But there's, you know, skip all the in-between entities, whatever they may be. But ultimately, we're in this living, wonderful, you know, like Patrick Carlin calls the big electron, wah, wah, you know, have you seen that one? it's a clever clip. I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
But he and Bill Hicks go, but somebody clip together.
Oh, yeah.
It's really good. But I'm going to get myself tripped off here. People sense this. They sense it. There's something there. So what guy comes along and says, there's a God that they try to connect people to what they want to explain is the source. And that's what you have to watch out for when someone's telling you the way to go. You say, no, you put the information out, you decide for yourself. And people got to find it for themselves, or that defeats the whole purpose of how to really learn. That's another one of the problems with the Matrix is people have been learned. They've learned to be taught rather than learn to go learn.
Yeah.
And that's one of the worst paradigms out there. But they've co-opted it. That's a sense of spirituality. They say, I can explain it for you. And look how it all fits together. And then they, you know, put it into a loop. And the person who's got this beautiful altruistic sense of a real love for this thing that is now called God, which term, you know, most in the alternative community don't use anymore because it's got so much freaking baggage. You can't, even if you're trying to say, you know, the big picture God, it brings up too much baggage. It's got psychological interference. But they've co-opted it in such an efficient way, while these people are actually beautiful souls who have in their hearts actually sense the real deal, and they're being blinded. Mm. And so when you have all these followers, you know, these are all beautiful people. They're, you know, I mean, there's some that are completely given over, and especially you see these pastors, and isn't it ironic that these nasties always gravitate towards leadership because that's where they can do the most damage.
That's right.
But that whole paradigm, and we all know religion's bad, but mystic Christianity, mystic anything, mystic Islam, people who really get it, but they're still, you know, it's decorated with their culture or their custom or what helps them in some way, but you can tell by their awareness of international issues and conspiracies and stuff like that, that they're not, I call them crunchy Christians. They're just stuck, you know, stuck in their little churchianity. They're just really not going anywhere. And they're defending instead of dialoguing with people. They just defend the same old junk. But so there's wonderful people, and I my heart really goes out to people like that. I went through a Christian phase in my life where it was a mystic Christian phase, and it was profound, and it was a stage in my life. But I passed on through it, as I have about five different other stages. And that's just the way it goes.
Sure.
You know, like I used to tell people, even back then, I'd tell people, if your idea of God isn't growing and changing every day, that's not God. Because it's stuck in your formulation. How can God possibly live within your little freaking mind concept of what God is? I mean, that's totally, totally impossible. Anyway, that used to raise some eyes amongst the people, but
I wanted to ask you about Christian Zionism, though, as well. I mean, it's a huge problem, especially in America, I think, with the support of Israel is like unprecedented, no matter what they do. And I'm also saddened to see that a lot of them haven't realized actually how resentful a lot of the Zionists are of the Christians. I remember this one clip, I think it was his name Louis Theroux or something? He did on Zionism. I forget the full title. If I find it, folks, I'll link it up so you can watch it. But it showed how some of the Christians were like, you know, of tears of joy that they could help this one Israeli Zionist to make his wine or whatnot, you know, and they were standing on this somewhere in Israel, hauling up barrels to him or whatnot, helping him out for free. And then it turned out that they were not allowed to go further into the winery because these were they're unclean, you know, these people.
Right.
So they couldn't like touch. Yeah, exactly. They couldn't touch the grapes. And there was all these like rules imposed on them. And they were like, they were just crying. They were so like, I'm helping God's chosen people. You know, they were so drawn into this. And you saw the resentment behind when the doors were closed. You're like, yeah, whatever. They help out. You know, so it's kind of saddening to see that, you know?
Oh, it's sickening. I mean, look at the irony. Here's a religion that was, you know, that pretty much dismantled the religion of its day, Judaism versus early Christianity. And their leader, who was the image of purity and truth and love, was crucified by these bastard forces who fought him tooth and tongue. And what do you know? Nowadays, they put these people who are the same entities, same driven by the same forces, as these worshipful masters. That they put them in this honored place. I mean, it's one of the biggest bamboozles of all time, and it's very serious in the United States. This is serious stuff. The Israel backing I mean, the media almost does represent the mass mind there because people have really fallen for it. I've got friends and relatives that this is a tough nut to crack.
Yeah, it is a tough. I've noticed that,
you know,
too.
David, I put up a good article about the Scofield Bible today, which is one of the sources of this misindoctrination. But they're not only teaching this pro-Zionist stance, rabid pro-Zionist, but they're also preaching this anti-Muslim rhetoric that is extremely strong. The Bible believers have, for the most part, believed that the mark of the beast, the 666, famous, that was supposed to be on the back of the hand or on the forehead, was going to be some kind of a chip. As even as far back as the 60s, I think that was what it was pictured as. Or you remember, it was the barcode and all this kind of stuff.
That's right.
This is a big deal in Bible prophecy because it's right there in Revelations during the apocalypse when everything's, you know, the different seven seals are coming down and the heavy stuff's going on. Everybody's got to take the mark. And if you take the mark, you're damned. If you don't, you're going to be killed and martyred. Pretty serious stuff. I mean, you talk about decision time.
And there's no way out of it, right?
So. We're all facing decision time for sure, but this is what they see coming, which may very well be the case. If you don't take this new chip, well, they're going to turn off. You're not going to be able to buy or sell anything, which is what it says.
Yeah.
And you know, it's combination predictive programming, warning, God knows what. It's all, you know, there's a lot of hodgepodge and all this prophecy stuff. But now they're teaching that the mark of the beast is Islam. It's allegiance to Islam. That is the mark of the beast. There's a teacher, I forget his name, but this is a big turn for the Christian community. And it hasn't taken over entirely, but it's a huge movement. And what that does is it tells, you understand how that would boil their blood, and they would treat Islam as something that needs to be eliminated.
Well, this is to create that conflict, you know, between these religious groups. And what, just one quick note here, what's funny about this is, of course, as well, is that when it gets this, you know, polarized, you do have those who can see this clear sentiment rising within the Christian world, so that the political oppositions to this, usually, you know, the more left on the political spectrum, they end up thinking that, oh my God, they're selling us this complete lie. So they turn to the complete flip side of this and fail to realize, as I've come to realize as well, that there actually is a real issue and threat of a conquest ideology that actually exists within Islam, and it's more prominent in Europe right now than it ever is, I think, going to be in America, although I know that there's some, you know, kind of rising Muslim communities there as well. But that's the other flip side to it. So what I'm getting at is that, so when there is a conflict rising between, let's say, Muslims in Europe and what the Muslims believe are, you know, Christian Europeans, they fail to realize that there is an issue or something going on there, and they think it's all just kind of a political construction, you know. And it's mm-hmm. extremely polarizing, this issue. It's very interesting you bring this up, you know.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. I mean, in the United States, you can see it's used to get more money for Israel and more money for the wars and backing. And they're completely cauterized now. The bombings, you know, like when Madeleine Albright said, oh, yeah, 500,000 dead Iraqi children are, you know, well, sorry, if it had to be done. Sure, it's worth it. It's they're behind this backbone of America. Now, obviously, in America, there's amazingly wonderful people, awakened people. And there's a rising, you know, movement of people who are finally seeing that the handwriting on the wall is their personal liberties get erased, their land gets confiscated, you know, their economy gets tanked, and they start to see, you know, then they got the immigration problem. You name it, it's going on there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're starting to get it. But again, it sort of brings us back to this conflagration we're sensing of this, all these issues coming to this crescendo, and within this is this awakening or not awakening, you know, and activating or watching. There's a lot of precipitating going on. What do they call that? A catalyst. Precipitates a liquid in a beaker. That's what we're going to see, is when the catalyst hits, all of a sudden, you've seen those experiments in school. It's got some liquid in it, and they drop in the catalyst, and all of a sudden, wham, all this white stuff falls to the bottom, and the rest of it's clear, or blue stuff, whatever they have. And that's how it works. We're about to see that, and it's going to cause some big eyes and some freaked out people. But you know, if it has to happen that way to wake people up, it's a form of love. You know, the universe doesn't fail. And one way or the other, people will, you know, will go through what they need to go through, but only if they don't take control of their lives and you know, are willing to take in the truth.
Yeah, but, they'll be like sucked into that, and they will be fooled by it. Yeah, I mean, I'm one can't help to question if this is some kind of, you know, a bigger, you know, trial in that regard, if it indeed is a weird kind of way, a rite of passage, right? Mm-hmm. Are you ready for, you know, the next process here and the next step in this, or are you just completely lost in the details of the human created world? And when nature strikes, it's honesty, authenticity, and a whole lot of tough love in that, you know?
So, Yeah, well said. Yeah, it's so true. It's a paradox. That's the thing about it. It's not, you know, it's not a linear thought process that can help that can get us to understand this full picture, because these other dynamics, the main these two. It's like this war about good and evil. I believe there's a war going on. It's a fight. It's a struggle, and decisions are being made. And how we come out of this phase, is extremely important. And we each need to do our part, whatever it takes. Some people believe that, you know, this yuga we're going through, this huge age, this could be an opportunity that will, you know, bring about a cycle, you know, of this, you know, of a wonderful change called the golden age or whatever. But it really is up to us. I mean, that's one of the debilitating things about religion. I'm going to sit back and Allah's going to do it, or Jesus is going to come, you know, and I'm just going to go to church and sing hymns.
Yeah.
Sorry, it doesn't work that way. And that's why religion, that's why they've installed it. That's to keep the people pacified and shut down.
That's right.
But yeah, that's why it's awakening. And those of us who do awaken, and if there aren't enough of us yet, well, we might be pretty damn surprised just how freaking bright our flames get. Because
yeah.
if we have to make up for numbers,
yeah,
damn it, we'll make up for numbers. You know, we are sold out. You know, those of us in this for real, when you're willing to do whatever it takes, believe me, universe is on your side.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of influences, you know, of all kinds. You know, and I tend to believe there's wonderful, as much as there's bad crap out there, you know, hitchhiking on people and causing problems, there is good stuff. And it is, you know, it's of a different nature. It's of a different vibration, but it's there. And it waits for us to act. It waits for us to make the right decisions. It's not going to do it for us.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it when you think about it. People, no, how can God let these things happen? Hello, what are you doing about it?
Yeah, bro? Exactly. Yeah.
Until you're in line, you can't talk about it. You have no, I'm not going to listen. When you get in line with what you're supposed to be doing, you know, then we'll have something to talk about. And by then, you will probably be agreeing. But anyway.
Yeah, no, it's good. Exactly. It's about that kind of where we started a little bit here today as well. The pacification process, the idea that it's like just a, you know, we're not engaged in our decisions, really don't have any influence, you know, it's all wrong. I mean, there individuals have changed the course of history forever.
Right.
It's just how it is. And whether, you know, goodness or darkness was on their side, that could be debated, but nonetheless, these things have occurred and happened, and we need to realize, and I believe you're right there. I think that if there's enough dedication and an understanding of the gravity of the situation of what we're faced here, then again, we will see some extraordinary individuals rising to the surface and having tremendous impact, a large impact on greater groups. And there's still a part of me also that realize that, yes, you know, not every human being is a leader. They can be a leader of their own lives and a dictator of their dictator, but dictating their own path of what they want to do and walk and all that, but at the same time, there are individuals that arise that are, you know, capable of influencing a lot of people, and that includes in a good direction. We've been so blindsided by this idea also that anyone who wants to be in that position, of course, must be a slimy, psychopathic, you know, garbage heap that we should never listen to. But I believe that there are actually good, natural leaders out there as well that actually a lot of people would respond to if they would rise to the occasion and step up to that plate. Zen, I don't know what you think about that, but
well look at the indigenous communities or the early cultures, who, you know, there was elders, there were shamans, they were looked up to, they were the wise ones, were the natural leaders. They went to them for decisions. I mean, obviously lower level decisions of which vegetables to pick that you know, that month, or, you know, maybe they didn't have to make every decision. It wasn't, I don't think society was ever meant to be, you know, dictatorial by one person. But there's, I mean, where do you go when you need something? You know, you go to someone you love, someone you trust, and that would be a natural inclination of any societal group.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, but I was, you know, when it comes to leadership and people becoming, you know, involved and rising to leadership, I think of, look at these, like the woman who started Mothers Against Drunk Driving. It's called MAD. in the United States. And her son was killed by a drunk driver. And she was just a mom. And she went off. And she became an activist. And she got legislation done. I mean, she just went off. There's others. Cindy Sheehan. She lost her son. She was not an activist before that. It pushed her over the edge. It's when it affected her personally. And you'll see so many people started like this. I mean, Gandhi underwent apartheid the first part of his life. And when he went to law school, he knew what depression was from day one. And then, I don't know his story well enough to say what happened, but people come out of circumstances. And who's to say who really had the goods to begin with? Because certainly some people have more gifts and talents in different areas, but when it comes to guts out responding, because leadership takes a lot of forms. It might just be one person's brave actions that provides the flame of leadership in other people's lives for what that one person did. And he never led a damn thing except what he did, but he led by his example. That's where I'm kind of saying we're each of us are leaders. If when we fulfill our role, we inspire all those around us and we change lives. And more than that, we change the morphic field. I talk about that a lot. We need to realize when we make a change, everything changes because we're all connected. You know, we may not see the drones stopping bombing in Pakistan right off the bat, but boy, I'll tell you what, every bit makes a difference. And I'm just thinking of people who started organizations based on a personal tragedy.
Right.
And said that's it. That's it. I'm going to campaign. Or the wonderful man who lost his son in 9/11, who campaigns with Richard Gage. You know, he tells the same story about his son, and he's just become an activist all over television. He lost his son. Anyway, it's really, really gripping, but he is so committed and he's always there at all these events and television appearances. Richard Gage, he was just an architect. And he got woken up by those books it's got three names. Those 9/11 books. Mm-hmm. And he was a right-wing, conservative, mild-mannered guy. And he just lit up. Dane Wigington, another one. He was working for Bechtel. But he wanted to have an off-grid house out in Northern California. And he built this he got a bunch of land and he loves the woods. He's got a Native American heritage. He's a beautiful spiritual man. And when he realized he wasn't getting the solar radiation he was supposed to for his solar power. And then he started seeing the chemtrails. And the man has been a tireless activist from that day. And he's moving mountains. But this was a guy who was just a Bechtel employee. I don't know if he ever was a leader in his life before. I'm just trying to encourage people that when any of us lights up, we become what we're supposed to be. We'll inspire other people to be what they're supposed to be. And that's leadership.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's leadership. And people need to realize that their effect is a heck of a lot more than they think. Because, you know, the tendency is, well, who am I? What can I do? I can hold a sign at a rally, or maybe I can write my congressman. No, we're talking about a way of life change here. We're talking about commitment, getting serious, doing some serious research, and getting involved. And it has to happen. I mean, you and I know we're at the crossroads.
Yeah. And
exactly. I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but I'm excited about it. I'm glad we are.
Yeah. Well, exactly. No, I agree with you there. It's about getting in touch with that. You know, bravery, heroism, honor, you know, the deeds of the warrior. This is something that's you know, part of us as well, and we have to recognize that and come into that you know, full potential. And on top of that too, we have this idea that we're being told, you know, that we are all the same too. But guess what, folks? We're not all the same. We have different talents. We're different. Mm-hmm. You know, weight of the influence of what we can impose upon the world. That's, you know, more follies of egalitarianism. And, you know, it's like all these issues, again, that stands in the way of our true human nature, which is beautiful and it's erratic. And it's although it's rational in its nature, it's irrational in its, you know, responses and its creativity. And we just need to let that sucker bloom. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
and get
right
there,
on,
you know,
yeah, right on, arise. It's really time. And that each of our influences is so profound. It's, I can't say that enough. That's what people need to realize. It's very empowering, very encouraging. It's just sitting there. It's this energy source that's just there. I mean, you talk about free energy device. You are one. Tap into it, for goodness sake. But you have to be willing to let go of the old. You have to be just a few pieces of crap, you know, old whatever, attachments. You'll know right off the bat what they are and just make the decision. And I'll tell you what, there's help to be had. Once you tap into it, there's a lot of love in the universe. There's a lot of wonderful influences that'll help empower and encourage.
All right, very good. Well, I've enjoyed this very much, Zen. Thank you so much for the wonderful conversation. It's great been talking with you and having you on the program finally. And of course, we're going to say please keep up the good work and everything else. And leave us if there's any other details you'd like to give out here. Of course, give the website and whatnot again. But if there's any closing words, please go ahead.
Oh, Hendrik, I can't thank you enough. This has really been inspiring talking with you. You're very... you draw things out. You have a real gift. I don't know. I kind of said what I wanted to say. I want to thank you for this conversation. It's just so important. And I want to wish everybody listening the best and much love. And visit the site. You'll find some encouragement there. Go through my older articles. There's a lot about this subject. It's zengardner.com. My articles are archived, but we have a lot of wonderful contributors. And as I said, terrific commenters, and you might find some good experiences there if you'd like.
Very good. ZenGardner.com. Do check it out, folks. Okay. Thanks. We'll do it again down the road if you're willing, Zen.
Sure thing. I'd love to.
That's our program for today. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your membership and helping us to continue with our intrepid investigations into new territory and the occasional discussion and analysis and perspective on the material that we learn. We have coming up Dennis Weiss, Jessica Andreasson, Josh Reeves, Gary Biltcliffe, Gordon Kennedy, and many more lined up after this. Please stay tuned to redicemembers.com and redicecreations.com for much more. Have a great weekend, and please do something else than go out and booze up. I mean, I don't think we have too many of you living that kind of life, but nonetheless, just an encouragement, you know? Go work out instead. Listen to some of our past shows in the archives, or learn something new about your history and your heritage. Spend some time with your kids and teach them about it too. Or encourage your friends to get into some of this stuff and learn and discover for themselves. All right, well, have a wonderful weekend, and thank you again. We'll speak more to you soon.